You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slings.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
Wow.
All right, welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. No Steve today. He is busy sunning himself in Cancun and ruining the week of a resort that did not know the meaning of the term all-you-can-eat, all-inclusive. The man is about to bankrupt some Mexican resort over there. But great draft show because we got our guy Trevor Sikkema and ESPN's Jordan Reed to join us and talk through some big questions in the draft. How's it going, guys?
It's going good. I did not realize that Steve was going to all-inclusive, and you're right. That place might be in its last week of business. They might have to shut down shop depending on what they have. If they have chicken wings there, and we all know what the price of chicken wings are at today's age. It's a travesty. If they have all-you-can-eat chicken wings, Steve genuinely might put those people out of business. So I feel bad for him. We might need to step in at some point, Sam, but I am doing well.
Yeah,
thank you.
That place doesn't know what's hitting it. Anyway, before we get into the whole topic today, if you want 30% off the PFF mock draft sim, get in there. Draft better than Trev. Not as well as Jordan, obviously, but better than Trev. You can get in there and crush a draft. 30MDS is the promo code to get you 30% off any PFF subscription. Get in there. Draft to your heart's content. Fix your team and crush it as well as you can. Jordan, tremendous pleasure, good sir, for you to see you on the show. We met in Indy while you were there. I want to run through some of the biggest questions in this draft from your take. We've been talking about all these things so far. One of the things that's jumped out at me recently is, and this is a guy that wasn't working out at Indy, should there be more of a conversation about whether Malik Nabers actually belongs either right there with or even ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.? This has been, from day one, Marvin Harrison Jr., he's the Trevor Lawrence. He's the anointed one. He's the best guy since Calvin Johnson or whatever it is. And the more you watch of Malik Nabers and the player tracking data has him literally number one, fastest guy in game speed, all this kind of thing. Did we do that too quickly? Like, should Nabers actually be getting more conversation for that wide receiver one topic?
Listen, I'm the biggest conductor of the Malik Nabers train, but I'm an even bigger fan of Marvin Harrison Jr. I just think Marvin is just on a different level than any other wide receiver in this class. And I said this on SportsCenter the other day, like, we use the term generational a little bit too loosely nowadays. So I'm just going to start saying statue builder. And statue builder means that 30, 40 years from now, like, Marvin could have a statue outside of the stadium of the team that drafts him. That's how confident I am in this evaluation of a player. And I think he's right there with the likes of Calvin Johnson, Ja'Marr Chase, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, the best wide receivers that we've seen this century. I think Marvin's just that good. And I think what's happening is it's called prospect fatigue. Like, we've been anointing these guys for so long. Eventually, I think everybody just gets bored and just starts poking holes in guys for no reason. But once they get into the league and they're just incredible, everybody was like, oh, man, yeah, this dude's pretty dang good. So I think that's what's happening with Marvin right now. And Nabers is very, very good. But I just think Marvin is just on a different planet.
Jordan, I feel like topic of conversation when we were at the combine in Indy was swirling around the quarterbacks as we figured that it would. And there was one quarterback in particular that everybody wanted to talk about, and it was JJ McCarthy. And you, in your recent mock draft, you put out a mock draft post combine edition. Everybody should go check that out over at ESPN.com. You have JJ McCarthy going to the Minnesota Vikings at number 11. So that's something that, man, I've seen that link more than a few times, it feels like, whether the Vikings are staying at 11 or sometimes I've seen the Vikings trading up into the top 10 to go get JJ McCarthy. From everything that you kind of saw, we know you got really good sources in the league. Obviously, you're a great scout as well. I'd love to hear what you think about what the NFL believes when it comes to JJ McCarthy and then what you thought of him as an evaluator.
Yeah, so what we're seeing happening with JJ right now is what I like to call the thrill of the unknown. So what happens a lot of times with the thrill of the unknown, we saw it with Trey Lance. Every NFL coach, or there's some NFL coaches, I should say, they feel as if they have the secret ingredients to really uncover that next layer of a player's development. So we're talking about a quarterback that just turned 21 years old in January, right, who was in a very run-heavy or run-centric type of offense. But when they did allow him to throw the ball, he was very efficient. Like, you can look up all the stats. He was very efficient. He probably was the most efficient quarterback on third down this year. Very good off of play action. So there's going to be some teams out there that say, what can this guy be a couple of years down the road when we actually allow him to throw the football and he has a really good infrastructure around him? So I look at a team like the Vikings that already has a great infrastructure. They have a good play caller in Kevin O'Connell. You have Justin Jefferson. You have Jordan Addison. TJ Hockenson will be back at some point next year coming off the torn ACL. They're going to get better running the football. We've already seen them relinquish some resources and try to get better in that aspect. So I think with the setup in Minnesota, I think that's very advantageous for JJ. I still think they're going to need to get a veteran in there, whether that's bring Kirk back or they sign somebody like a Jacoby Brissett or a Russell Wilson or whoever, some veteran in there to be the bridge guy, just because JJ's not going to be ready right away. But I just think that's a really good setup for JJ to succeed starting in 2025 and beyond.
We're reaching the point in the whole process where everyone is projecting trades left, right, and center, right? Are Chicago going to trade down to 2? Are they going to trade down further? Is somebody else trading up to 3? All this kind of stuff. You had one of the most interesting trades I've seen in your mock. You had Chicago sitting there at number 1, resetting the clock, taking the quarterback, but then you had them trading back up to go and get that quarterback a special weapon. Is that something you think could actually happen? And should we be focusing more on, like, the quarterback thing is a done deal. They're making that happen. What are they going to do in addition to that to really knock this out of the park?
It honestly was just a fun idea. Just because you guys know with mock drafts, you play around with so many different trades and different scenarios. But I was just thinking, I think the Bears are in a situation now of where they're over the stage in their rebuild of where they just need to collect quantity of picks, just because I think they have a really good foundation in place, especially on defense. I mean, you get Montez Sweat, Jalen Johnson is a really good building block, and they have plenty of others on defense, but they just don't have those foundational pieces on offense right now. DJ Moore and Cole Kmet are their building blocks on offense. So why not you take Caleb Williams, number 1, and then you go up and you get another building block in Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers, whoever it is. So my line of thinking behind that was, you're going to get another pick back from Justin Fields, whether it's a 3rd or 4th round pick. You're going to get a day 2 or day 3 pick in some form or fashion. So you're going to get back that 3rd that you give up this year for trading up. And then next year, you already have 2 second-rounders already from the Bryce Young trade when the Panthers came up. So losing that 3rd-rounder, I don't think is a huge blow. So I'm fine with giving up those 2 3rd-round picks to trade up from 9 to 5. And then I don't think Rome or Malik is going to be there at number 9 overall. That's why I had them trading up ahead of the Giants, just because they need wide receiver help, and that's a popular landing spot for a wide receiver too. Then also, the worst kept secret at the draft is the Chargers wanting to trade back. I think the Chargers want to trade back just because they're going to go through a lot of roster turnover. So that was my big line of thinking behind it. Just go ahead and be aggressive. Go ahead and get who I think is 2 of the top 5 players in the draft, and Caleb Williams and Malik Nabers.
Yeah, it does feel like that Chargers pick is kind of up for grabs, or they're open for business, whatever you want to say. I mean, Joe Ortiz said in his opening press conference, like, oh, they asked him how they built such a great core of a roster in Baltimore. They're always competing in that. And he kind of said, like, you got to have a lot of draft picks. And very clearly, I think that was a little hint or a subtle way to say, our phones are open. Come call us. So that number 5 pick, I agree with you. That's going to be a hot one to watch when it comes to draft weekend. I want to talk about corners with you, because this is a really fun corner class, especially at the top. And I can't figure out who's going to be CB1 off the board, because you've had people say, man, it's Terrion Arnold. They watched his tape this past year. Khalid McKinstry didn't get a ton of action because of how well he played last year. So instead, they tried to throw it at Arnold. That didn't work out well. He's picking the ball off. He's knocking it away. He's doing all that kind of stuff. Then you do stuff like, man, you watch him at the podium. You listen to him speak. You hear him with Stacey Dales talk about his mom. And she's like, this dude, he just seems like such a good dude. Like, teams are going to absolutely love him. But then you got Quinyon Mitchell as well. Crazy tape over the last 2 years. Really productive player. Goes in the Senior Bowl. They put him in press coverage. He absolutely dominates. Comes to the combine. He dominates there as well. So I'm curious, after kind of what you've seen, but also what you've heard, do you think there's more momentum for one guy or the other when it comes to who is going to be CB1 off the board?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think going into the Senior Bowl, I think Terrion was the guy for a lot of people, just because Quinyon had so many question marks. You know, being a group of five prospect, how would he match up against going against these upper level type of players and upper level type of athletes? And I mean, you were there. I thought he was the best player regardless of position at the Senior Bowl. He was terrific. And then he goes out at the combine and he checks another box. So Quinyon Mitchell has just continued to check box after box after box throughout the pre-draft process. And that's something that scouts and evaluators love to see. So I think that stretch from 12 to 17 in the draft, starting with the Broncos at 12 and then with the Jaguars at 17, I think that's where we could see either one of those guys come off of the board or even both. But if I had to guess right now, I wouldn't be shocked that Quinyon Mitchell is the first corner off of the board, just because there's a lot of love out there for him right now, just because of the boxes that he has continued to check throughout the pre-draft process.
Do you find that evaluating corners has become sort of trickier recently? Because I think the thing everyone looks at when they're scouting cornerbacks is it's kind of man coverage skills, right? You're watching, how does a guy turn? How does he bump and play bump and run coverage? Can he sort of read the movements of receivers during patterns? Like, everyone's really studying the man cover ability of a corner. But most of the NFL is playing zone coverage most of the time. And Arnold, I think, is a really interesting player, because I can't remember a cornerback that has better man cover skills than Arnold. Like, he is disgustingly good at that stuff. Like, his movement skills are nuts. His ability to flip and not lose speed is crazy. I genuinely can't think of a corner that's had better fluid man cover skills than him. But I don't know that he's been that great in zone coverage. And he feels like he reads it a tick late. You know, there's like Devon Witherspoon last year, like light years better at zone coverage type stuff than he was. So you're sort of looking at this and you're saying, I genuinely can't think of a prospect that's been better at this thing that used to be everything from cornerback play. If you had a guy that could do that, you had like the best cornerback in the NFL right out of the box. Now you have a guy where you're saying, we only do that a third of the time. We need the other stuff to be really good as well. And that's a projection.
I think this is the hardest part from a media standpoint, just because we're not running a scheme. So there's going to be some teams that prefer Quinyon Mitchell over Terrion Arnold, just because of the things that you just said. I think Quinyon is more consistent as far as a dual threat in man and zone, just because he has more experience doing it. But then you look at the man cover skills and the fluidity of Terrion Arnold, I think he's unmatched in this draft class. So us not running a scheme or just saying that, hey, I would rather have the man corner as opposed to the zone corner or vice versa, that's the hard part for us. But I think with Terrion, they just don't run zone a lot. Like Nick Saban and his defensive scheme, they run a lot of press man. So that's what he has a lot of experience doing. But I think why Terrion is so comfortable with doing that stuff is just because he was a safety when he first got to Alabama. So he's seen the defense from the back end and then transitioning to nickel and then playing outside corner too. He has so many different reps and different visualizations of the defense from so many different lenses. I think that's what really helps him.
All right, Jordan, we got to have this conversation here. Sam is trying to get me to hate Brian Thomas Jr. with him, all right? Right before you even popped on, he's like, I don't get it. He drops passes. Like, I can't see it the way that everybody else does. This guy went out there 209 pounds and ran a 4.33 official 40-yard dash. I mean, he's a crazy athlete. We saw the production from LSU. I'm not there with Sam, but Sam kind of looks at Brian Thomas Jr. as, Sam, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, like, he feels – as one of the most overrated prospects right now to you. Is that true?
Yeah, or I'll wrap it up for you, right? He is now becoming the consensus wide receiver 4, right? And I currently do not have him in my top 10. So that's
not
how I feel.
Not in the top 10?
No, not in the top 10.
Wow.
Not. No. He's Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That's it. The end.
So I'll break it down like this. I'm a fan of Brian Thomas Jr., and it's funny you guys mentioned him just because now he didn't test as good as this guy. Well, maybe he did, now to think back on it. So his draft, pre-draft process reminds me a lot of DK Metcalf when he was coming out. And I'll break it down like this. So if you remember, the big question about DK was that could he change direction? Could he run routes? Could he run anything besides vertically? And the question, I mean, the answer was no. Like, if you just keep this guy moving north and south, he's going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL right away. Just don't make him change directions, slants, outs, hitches. Don't let him run any of that stuff. Just run him straight. That's who Brian Thomas is. Like, just run him north and south. 10 out of 17 touchdowns last year were on vertical patterns. And if you look at his LSU tape, all of his explosive plays are running vertical. And then if you look at him at the combine, you can go back and watch the workout. He struggled on those slant patterns, those out patterns, those sideline breaking routes. He didn't look very good doing that stuff just because he doesn't have a lot of experience doing it. But if you run him vertical and you just allow him to say, hey, just make these routes a track meet and just run past everybody. That's what he did in the SEC. So I think he's going to be able to do that on the next level. Now, is he as strong as DK Metcalf as a route runner? No, just because the body dimensions are very different. But if you allow him and you specialize his package to just be a vertical guy with an occasional intermediate or short routes, I think he can be a high-end wide receiver too.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
See,
that's still a top 10 wide receiver in this class, Sam.
Oh, without question.
It's still without a top question. 10 wide receiver in this class.
See, this is why the draft process is so fascinating, right? Because we're seeing the same things. We're just projecting it differently. Like, we're all essentially reading this guy the same way. But my concern is that, like, the league has changed the last couple of years. Vertical explosive plays are being taken out of the game. And one-trick ponies, quote-unquote, they're just not as dangerous as they used to be. So, you can have a guy who still excels in that, and it's scary for a defense, and you have to respect it. But DK Metcalf, I think, has become a more varied and versatile receiver. And, of course, like, there's a legit difference between how scary a guy is when he's 210 pounds versus a guy who's like 235. It's a different problem for a cornerback. But my concern is, like, if he's only Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I mean, Scantling just got drop-kicked off the Chiefs roster because that wasn't getting it done anymore. Like, you need more than that.
He also had, like, the clutch catch to send him to the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, one of them. But, sure, you can show up big at a given moment, but I need more than that.
All right, so hold on. Here's my question for you. Bill's at 28. Would you take Brian Thomas Jr.?
So he would be an interesting Gabe Davis, replacement slash analog.
I always look. Some right. people want to have him, like, top 20. Earlier. If you don't have him top 20, I think you're projecting
Colts at 15.
Him to be. Oh, you think Colts? Oh, see, that, like, that's the same thing, though. Colts need that type of a player.
But isn't that, like, we're sort of, again, it's almost the same conversation. Like, Gabe Davis is being let go because he never became the player that everyone wanted him to become. He remained essentially a one-trick pony for his entire time there, and they're like, we need more than that, and they've already kind of supplanted him in the team by Khalil Shakir, who was drafted way lower. Somebody help me out. Where was he actually taken? But
where was Shakir?
He was fourth round.
Right.
Yeah, like lower than he should have been.
So you know what I mean? If somebody comes out there and goes, Khalil Shakir is better than Gabe Davis as a prospect, you'd be like, you're an idiot. But he's ending up a better NFL player because he can do more.
Yeah, I don't know, though. The streamlined part of it, I don't think, is as much of a negative as you're making it out to be. Like, Gabe Davis and Marquez Valdes-Scantling are getting... they're moving on from the team's moving on from them because of their inconsistencies. It's not necessarily that their role, what they do, wasn't good enough.
You mean like all those drop
they
passes?
They weren't consistent enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like all those drop passes that are there on Thomas's tape. Go. Is that
all right,
what we're saying?
Don't do this to me. Don't do this. We're not going to fight in front of Jordan. All right, we're not going to do this. Do you have another question? Because I actually kind of I want to ask Jordan. All jokes aside about Brian Thomas Jr., I know it feels like it's kind of like a clump of players after the big three. Do you have a preference wide receiver four right now? I know it's kind of like scheme dependent for a lot of these guys, but like Brian Thomas Jr., Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Xavier Legette, like there's so many guys that you could rattle off. I'm curious, do you have a strong feeling about a wide receiver four right now, or does it really, like you said, kind of become team dependent after the big three?
I really like Adonai Mitchell of Texas. He's my favorite in this class right now, as my daughter comes in here right now.
Hey!
Nice.
I like Adonai Mitchell of Texas. He's one of my favorites in this draft class, and I thought he performed really well at the combine. He did so many good things. I thought him running 4.34, I believe it was, at 6'2", 205 pounds, jumping 39.5 inches in the vertical. That's really, really going to help him a lot. And he's another one I could see the Colts taking at 15. The Bills at 28 are a really good match. And Lord, please don't let him land in Kansas City. I think he's going to be a really good match for Patrick Mahomes as well. So that wide receiver four for me right now would be Adonai Mitchell. I'm a big fan of him.
I wanted to ask you about the edge rushers, because it seems to me like we're getting a slightly lower down version of the repeat of the Trayvon Walker versus Aiden Hutchinson conversation, right? On the one hand, we've got technician and production, and in that I've got Latu this year. And on the other side, we've got athlete and project and, you know, potential. And that was Trayvon Walker, and that's Dallas Turner this year, right? And it feels like we're sort of rerunning this again of what do you prefer? Do you want the potential and the athleticism that we can turn into something special, or do you want the guy that's already just really good and might, you know, still be really good at the next level? Where do you fall on that kind of top of the edge rusher conversation? And obviously that's, you know, leaving aside a guy like Jared Verse, who's in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think Verse is that guy that's the best of both worlds as far as a run defender and a pass rusher. But Latu or Turner is kind of like either or. Now, if you're talking about you want to generate pass rush and we had a game tomorrow, I would feel most comfortable in Latu just because he's so mature with his hands. He does everything that you want from a pass rush standpoint. But he does have some things to work on as far as a run defender. And then you have the neck questions as well. We don't know as far as the medical situation. That's going to be different for every team as far as how comfortable they are investing, especially in the first round edge rusher. When you're talking about neck issues or previous medical questions about a neck, that's a big deal. But with Dallas Turner, I just think the upside is so good with him. And I know that P word, potential, gets you in a lot of trouble. But if you look at it, even playing without Will Anderson Jr. last year, his numbers got better. So that is the type of projection that you want to see. He's a really good run defender already. And then he still doesn't really understand how to use and tie together or marry together his pass rush moves. And I think that's just reps with him. But I think an underrated part about Turner's game is that he's comfortable dropping in coverage too. So he's very scheme versatile as well. It's not a situation of where he can only play this position or this position. I think he can play any position up front. Now, he's not going to live inside on the next level, but if you want to run what I call those NASCAR packages on third down, you want to reduce him inside, he's going to help you there. You can drop him out in coverage as a 7 or a 9 technique too. So I think there's so many different things that you can do more with Dallas Turner, and just the arrow is pointing up with him. Even though Latu is the better rusher right now, I think Turner can eventually get to where Latu is, and he's a little bit more dependable as a run defender too.
We got about 5 more minutes with Jordan, and I wanted to circle back to quarterbacks, the guys at the very top. It feels as though everybody that I talk to in Indianapolis just feels as though Caleb Williams is going number one. I mean, I have yet to read a mock draft, I think, within the last month or so that has anything else other than Caleb. And for a while, we were debating Caleb or Drake, Caleb or Drake. And Caleb's always kind of been the favorite, but now he feels like he's turning into that runaway favorite. It seems, though, is that we have a legitimate debate between not just Drake May and Jaden Daniels, but maybe even you're throwing J.J. McCarthy in there as well. When you've watched Drake May is clearly QB2 for me. Like, from what I've seen on tape, I think he's got all the tools in the world. He's had a ton of production over the last couple of seasons, and yet we're hearing he might not. Not only may he be QB2, like he might even be QB3, QB4 in this class. So it feels contrast to what I feel like his potential is and his arm talent. But what have you heard about Drake May? What do you like about Drake May? Where is he for you in this quarterback class?
I still have him comfortably as the quarterback too, so I'm right there with you. I just think the combination of everything that you get with Drake from an arm talent standpoint, the mobility, and then just the consistency as a three-level thrower, I think he was better than Jaden in that aspect. Now, Drake didn't have the year that he wanted to. I mean, a lot of people were saying he potentially could be the number one pick along with Caleb I think that's a long discussion. I think that's a distance that is far in the future now, far in the past, I should say. I think Caleb is far and away the consensus number one guy now, but Drake is still that number two guy for me. But what is so frustrating about Drake and why I can see some people have him potentially dropping is just he'll throw a 60 or 70 yard bomb that's just a beautiful throw, and then the next few plays he'll come out and he'll throw a simple pass in the dirt. That's a short pass. So I just think a lot of flaws that Drake has right now are correctable with NFL coaching. And then something that I think he doesn't get enough credit for is that he didn't have Tez Walker until the middle of last season. So he was throwing to a bunch of new guys. He was playing in a new scheme as well. And it took him a bit of time to overcome some of those things. But when he did get Tez Walker, I believe it was the Miami game, I mean, it was absolutely fireworks. And, you know, Drake was very inconsistent, especially down the back stretch of the year. But I just think a lot of his flaws, particularly his footwork, I think that is very correctable over time. But he just has to clean up some of the consistent the inconsistent things that he has right now. And I just think the world of Drake, man. I think he's going to be really good. And I just think a lot of people are just overthinking him, especially some of the flaws that he has right now.
All right, Jordan, we're going to let you get out of here, but thank you so much for dropping by and talking draft with us. People, go check out Jordan's mock draft on ESPN.com. And where else can they catch your work, Jordan?
On X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at Jordan _Reid. That's at Jordan _Reid, as well as ESPN+.
Awesome. Thank you again so much.
Appreciate it, Jordan. Right,
thank you, guys.
Yeah, Trev, the Drake-May conversation is getting interesting. I feel like evaluations or draft stock or whatever you want to call this, I feel like they take on like a momentum of their own. So once things start leaning in one direction, it's like when you hear commentators talk about offensive linemen, you know, once you get 330 pounds moving, can't stop it. Once we decided that Drake-May actually needed to be criticized a little bit and we needed to pick him apart, now you can't stop that freight train. Now we're just dinging him left, right, and center. And it's like, nah, he might not even be QB3. We're taking him all the way down. It's like, okay, come on. Let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Like, I was leading the charge to say, I feel like we've overrated this guy a bit. There's some problems here. I don't love the prospect. But, like, only so far. Like, he still has an insane tool set. And, like, the projection can still be ridiculously good.
Yeah, I'm with you, and we'll see how their NFL careers turn out. We'll see where they end up getting drafted, but since the summer, I've had Caleb Williams very clearly as quarterback one in this class. I've had Drake May very clearly as quarterback two, even with the rise of J.J. McCarthy, even with the rise of Jaden Daniels. You know, when the season ended right around December, kind of got a good look at these guys again and went through some of their film, but I didn't end up getting to my, like, draft guide deep dive into these players for quarterbacks until, when was this? Like, beginning of February-ish? And I kind of felt bad about it at the time because I didn't have as confident of an answers or detailed of answers when people would ask me about quarterbacks in January. And I was like, man, you know, they're just later on the schedule. But I'm actually kind of glad that I did that because it allowed the Jaden Daniels hype to really start to gain speed. And then when I went over these quarterbacks again for the draft guide, that was a prevalent thing in the media. J.J. McCarthy as well, like, the hype was really starting to grow for him. And I went back and I watched a ton more of these guys' tape, and I went, Drake May's QB2. Like, I don't have reservations about it at all whatsoever. Caleb was still clearly QB1 for me, and Drake was very clearly still QB2. So amongst all of the hype, it was great to really get into the film again in the beginning of February when I was doing the draft guide stuff and just reaffirm to myself that, no, I mean, what I thought in December is true, even though we hear a lot of rumors of the stock of the rest of these guys and what the NFL could be thinking about Daniels and McCarthy. May is still QB2 for me, man. I think that anybody who has a quarterback choice outside of Caleb Williams and isn't taking Drake May, I think they're overthinking it.
I think the process around all of this stuff, right, scouting, ranking, all this kind of thing, is a really interesting element because I don't know what the correct answer should be. On the one hand, I think there's a lot of merit and virtue to doing it in your own little silo, isolated from the world and not knowing what the consensus opinion is, right? So I like sort of not really following college football and coming to draft prospects essentially completely fresh and just getting my own take on guys because I'm not like influenced by 3 years of watching this dude, you know, play for USC or whatever. Like, the first time I've ever heard of half these guys is when we start doing draft prep, and you just get your initial take, right? But then there's also, I think, a lot of merit to, okay, I didn't like Brian Thomas at all from my first go-through, but everybody loves him, right? And I think there's a lot of value in sort of knowing that and saying, all right, I'm clearly seeing it different to these people, so at the very minimum, I should go and check myself and make sure that I'm comfortable with that, or did I just, like, watch him wrong? You know, was it a bad day? Was I already 8 wide receivers deep and just got lazy that time? Like, it's a good check, right, to just go and say, like, immediately I had a flag on Brian Thomas Jr. because at that point I kind of knew that he was getting quite popular as a top pick, and I didn't like him. So in my notes was, like, a flag of, hey, check this again later because you like him a lot less than everybody else does, and at the very minimum, make sure you like that. So for NFL teams, I think this is the thing as well, right? I know that NFL teams try and, like, isolate their scouts and don't let them sort of look at grades or any of this stuff because they want them doing this isolated in a vacuum. But there is also, there needs to be a cross-check process somewhere of, like, this is where the consensus is, you know, are we comfortable with our differences and why do they exist?
I always like talking draft with you because of kind of what you said. Our timelines are very different. You know, I'm looking at these guys in June, right, for the first time, and I'm coming up with top 10s for all these positions. And I like that. I prefer that myself, but it's always great to get, like you said, like a fresh perspective on it. And that's why, you know, going back to what I was saying, when I was doing a lot of the draft guide prep, it's great because a lot of the, we're starting to hear a lot of the rumors. We're starting to hear the hype of what the NFL might believe. And it gives me a chance to really go back to the tape and say, okay, how do I feel about this independent of what the NFL is seeing? When this guy tells me, okay, no, you should like this player. Do I, you know, do I see it the same way? And, you know, we were joking about this before the show that a handful of us were a little bit lower on Tyree Wilson last year than consensus. Like, it felt like Tyree Wilson was a consensus top 10 player for a lot of really great evaluators. And I'm not saying that you know, we're taking the victory lap on being lower on Tyree Wilson. I think this year could be potentially a huge year for him. And I felt like it was always going to take a little bit of time for him to figure it out from Texas Tech to the NFL. So he's right on the timeline of when he would really take that leap anyways. But you know, I just remember people watching him, and to this point, it just doesn't feel like he's living up to that sort of top 10 potential. And maybe that's the way that you're kind of seeing it with a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., but it's always great to get different people's perspective. You don't want to fall into the groupthink too much. You want to be able to stand firm in your convictions on what you think about these prospects. But it is good to, I would say, at this time of the year, hear other people's perspectives and ask their rankings, because it allows you to either see something you didn't see, or it just fortifies what you believed about a prospect, right, and you say, nope, somebody actually tried to challenge me on this, and I just, quite frankly, don't think that way. I don't see this player this way. So this time of year is, I think, good for that kinds of stuff.
Also, because of what we talked about with Jordan, which is you can see a guy the same way, but sort of evaluate it differently, right? Like, one of the things I like is when you sort of see something of a player and you've identified this thing and you're like, okay, I think this is either really good or really bad, right? And it sort of weighs, you know, reasonably heavily in your overall evaluation of that player. And then you see somebody else at least identify that same thing, and even if they evaluate it or project it or analyze it slightly differently, you're like, okay, there's validation in at least seeing somebody else seeing what you're seeing and then debating whether that's going to be a big deal or not. So remember when we first started talking about Malik Nabers, and one of the things I told you was I really get leery about his shoulder shrug type of thing at the line of scrimmage where he tries to avoid press coverage rather than take it on and defeat it with his hands. And Steve Smith Sr., you know, does stuff for Underdog, I think, and he identified the same thing. He doesn't like it, doesn't think it flies in the NFL. I think he said it was correctable, you know, something you can fix reasonably easily, but there was a validation in that, right? Like, Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver Steve Smith identifies exactly the same thing as, like, the biggest problem with Malik Nabers' game, and then it just becomes, how big of an issue do you think that is when you're projecting him into the NFL?
Yeah, and just kind of like as a, I don't even mean as a counter to that, because I'm not saying that Steve is wrong in any way, shape, or form. I mean, all pro receiver. I mean, I respect Steve's view of wide receivers a lot, but I remember watching a video of Cooper Kupp where he himself, like, breaks down what he does as a receiver, and he emphasizes like that speed release where you're kind of like showing your hands a little bit, but then you are basically just trying to dip your shoulder underneath them and try to get away as cleanly and as fastly as quickly, I should say, as possible. So it's like you have two. It's kind of exactly to your point. We're watching the same exact thing, but on one hand, you could go, "Ooh, I've watched and listened to Cooper Kupp talk about how valuable a shoulder dip speed release is." Whereas, okay, you could watch another all-pro receiver tell you, "Hey, it's great in college, can't really do it as much in the NFL." So it all just kind of depends on how athletic you are, how much it is a natural part of your game. And so it is, man. That's the part of this that's kind of fascinating, is being able to see the same things and almost come to different conclusions, come to different predictions of what you think that's going to be at the NFL level.
And the next topic will be a perfect example of that, which we'll get to in just a minute. But first, if you have a family like I do, then you need to get term life insurance to protect them. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make. And the start of the new year, March the 6th, is the perfect time to get it done, so you can focus on whatever else the year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, Trev. Running backs. All I hear is that it's not a good running back class. You know, there's no Bijan. Nobody's going in the first round, blah, blah, blah. Am I wrong to like this running back class? Like, I don't know that there's a consensus, you know, 1, 2, 3 top guys, but I like a lot of them. I think we're going to get half a dozen legitimately useful, like, contributing running backs this year, even if they're not every down bell cows, which, frankly, almost nobody is using anyway anymore.
Well, I think that's true, but I think that's also the problem, right? Is that we feel like we have that conclusion every year where we go, oh, there. I mean, Bijan's obviously an exception, but you know, we just go, oh, you know, there's one guy at the top, and then I just think it's a bunch of guys who are really going to round out the league. Well, at some point, it's a numbers game. Like, there's just not enough spots for running backs. So I agree with you completely. I think there's a lot of backs here, but it's the same conversation with linebackers, right? I was just talking with somebody about this the other day. There's a lot of linebackers that I think could be decent depth players and special teams players, and I kind of feel the same about these running backs. Like, there's a lot of guys who could be committee players, short yardage backs, you know, home run hitters if you want to put them in that situation, goal line guys, pass protection guys. There's a handful of those players. It just is a matter of kind of where they fall, but I don't hate the running back class as much as I feel like a lot of other people do. I think Jonathan Brooks, to me, is my clear RB1. I don't really have reservations about that. I like Jalen Wright from Tennessee a lot as my RB2. I think he's got really good athleticism. He showcased the explosiveness of the combine. He's got good hands, but he's got, most importantly, what I think is the best pass protecting tape out there of any of the backs. So I think that versatility and that athleticism combination is huge for him. It's why he's RB2 for me. And then he got a lot of other guys to like, you know, like Blake Corum, Trey Benson, Bucky Irving, Audric Estime, you know, like a lot of these dudes who you see working out at the NFL level. I mean, for as controlled, as good a vision as Blake Corum has, man, if he just continues to be healthy, if he continues to get back to what he was before he tore, I think it was his ACL, right? I think he tore his ACL 2 years ago in the Ohio State game. If he remains healthy, this is an effective, efficient running back in the NFL. So I agree with you. I don't, just because there's not a Bijan Robinson in this class doesn't mean we're not going to get a handful of guys that could be backs by committee, fantasy football relevant, like all that kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, most teams are not using an every down bell cow that can do everything anyway, right? So being limited to a specific or simply not being able to carry the ball 300 times a season in addition to 50 targets, in addition to, you know, all the snaps you're going to have to play, like that role is reserved for like three guys anyway. Nobody else is doing that. So you can still be, you know, James Cook or whatever, not having that role. You can still be like a really high level player. And you could talk me into like half a dozen different guys coming out of this draft class and being RB1 and being like top tier, you know, maybe not elite Christian McCaffrey type players, but like serious NFL contributors, like useful, positive parts of a backfield.
I think the question just becomes what fans do with that information, right? A lot of people think of that and they just think the word replaceable. So they say, okay, well, they don't have any value at all. I'm not drafting them till, you know, fourth round, whatever. I would push back on that. And I think that we're going to get a lot of running backs that still end up going on day two of the draft this year. They're just probably going to be a lot of guys in the third round. But once you see that first team take a chance on a running back, then I think it will be a waterfall after that. And I think we'll get a handful of those guys. Like I could see Jonathan Brooks or Jalen Wright or even Blake Corum, I think, going somewhere in the second round and then that really starting a run to where all of a sudden maybe we don't get it back until, I don't know who picks 45, I'm just throwing out a number, like pick 45, pick 50, whatever it is. But then from pick 50 to 101 at the end of the third round,
right,
maybe we have five go off the board, six go off the board. So it's just not as prioritized in the top 50, but that doesn't mean that a lot of these guys are scrubs or they're not going to get NFL chances. I just think that it's all about how you see it.
Yeah, and I'm not even necessarily advocating that they should get drafted higher than they're going to. I just think we sort of, it seems that there is no first rounder in most people's eyes is equated with this is a bad draft class, whereas actually a ton of running backs in the NFL are not drafted in the first round. They're drafted lower down anyway. This is like the ideal running back draft where nobody's going to go high. If you need one, they're going to be available in the second or third round. It's where you should be picking them anyway. And you might just walk in. Like if you told me that next year Trey Benson was going to step into the NFL and immediately be a 1,200-yard back who contributes well in all areas, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest. And you might stumble into him like in the third round without having to give anything up to make it happen. Like it's the perfect draft for running backs.
Trey Benson being a 1,200-yard back in the NFL would in fact shock me because he never got over 1,000 yards at any point when he was in college. But I see what you're saying, obviously.
Whatever. He's built for it. He's ready to make it happen. Look,
Do you like him? Where's he? Have you done running back rankings?
I haven't formally put them into rankings, but I do like Trey Benson. I'm confused because, like I said, you could talk me into six different guys being running back one in this class. The only thing I'm reasonably wedded to is Blake Corum will be my running back one, I think.
Okay. That's fair.
But like Trey Benson, you know, what did he end up coming in at? It was like 221, no, right?
He's super athletic. Like yeah. I think him and in a running back class where we're really looking for athletes, I think Benson and Jalen Wright from Tennessee are clearly athletic enough to really succeed at the NFL level. The thing that worries me about Trey Benson is I think he wants to win with athleticism a little too much, and you just don't get a lot of that in the NFL. Now, that I will be honest, that also worried me about Kenneth Walker.
Right.
When he was at Michigan State, he just wanted to bounce everything out to the outside. The second he even felt a threat between the tackles, he was like, I'm at the sideline. Yeah, I'm already there. And that normally doesn't work at the NFL level because corners are better at run defense. Linebackers can run faster to the sideline, and normally they just catch you before you're able to do something. Walker was strong enough and I think developed good enough vision, especially in Seattle, to be able to find some of those cutback lanes and become a really, really good player. So Benson's sort of that same mold, but I don't think he has the same kind of vision and anticipation that Walker does. And so instead, I'm worried that he's going to try to outrun everybody at the NFL level, and there are just so very few players that can actually do that. So I like Benson. I had him as my RB1 going into the year because his forced missed tackle rate per attempt was nuts in 2022. It was like 0.51. That's almost 0.10 higher than Bijan Robinson's best season. Like, it was nuts how much this guy was making people miss. But you watch his tape and you go, okay, he's making people miss more so because he's hitting a rushing lane and he's turning on the jets more so than he is like really setting guys up, really feeling open space really well, you know, using agility, using one cut ability, using his footwork. not that he can't, he just, again, doesn't do it as often. And so that kind of worries me about Benson, is him being a little athlete or straight line speed dependent when it comes to the NFL level.
Yeah, my first run through of the running backs, he was my running back three, but he's the most like prototypical NFL athlete of the group, you know?
Yeah, I would agree.
He was, his combine numbers, so 6'2", 216, ran a 4.39 with a 1.52 split, 33.5 vert, 10'2" broad jump. I mean, these are high level NFL athlete numbers. And I was just firing up the new PFF tracking data metrics. You're on my side, right? Like, we can formally on this show collectively now argue that GAR is not the term that this thing should be, when the open goal of gas is sitting right there. Game athleticism score instead of game athleticism rating. Gas is what this thing should be called. GAR is an error in judgment from somebody and needs to be corrected before I have to say it too many times live on this show.
I would agree 100%.
Excellent.
Because obviously it's, you know, topical as well. It conveys the point that you want.
It's too easy. This guy is all gas.
Sometimes
this guy's running low on gas. It's right there. It's an open goal.
This guy's low on gas. Yeah, the tank is full. You know, like, it's all right there.
It is.
He's running with premium.
It's right there. It's sitting right there. It's an open goal. Just tap it into the net. Instead, somebody went out there and went GAR, and now that's what we're stuck with. Anyway, I fired up the GAR in PFF Ultimate, just curious where Trey Benson was. He ranks almost right at the very top of the max speed type metrics, right? He's only behind Jalen Wright, I think, from the top guys that we're going to talk about. And then when you fire up his individual page, if I can find that particular thing right now, talk amongst yourselves when I find that overview.
Okay.
Here we go. This will be better than the other day, hopefully, when Steve tried to get a sheet to load for about 10 minutes. 92nd percentile, 92nd.6 percentile the year before. So, like, we're talking about a top-tier athlete is my point with Trey Benson, which is both verified in combine measures and PFF GAR. Henceforth, will be known as gas on this show, regardless of whether the people above believe buy into that or not.
Can't Steve change that? Isn't that his thing?
He was voted down.
What?
I haven't spoken to the source of whoever actually determined that GAR was the correct way forward. So far, you included, that's now five different people, all of whom voted gas. Somebody somewhere is voting GAR, and I don't know who that person is, but they're wrong, and it's a war crime, and it should cease now.
What does R stand for?
Rating, I think.
So score.
Game athleticism rating instead of score.
Game athleticism score.
It's just wrong.
Gas.
It is. Very
guy's
few
running
times
off diesel, you know. If you got a big back who can run fast, you know, you just be like, yeah, he's running off diesel.
Very few times in life is there a hard and fast black and white, right or wrong, right? It's all layers of gray, shades of gray. It's all, you know, on the one hand this, on the other hand that. This is it's wrong. It's wrong, and it shouldn't be allowed to persist. And I think on this show we should stand up for what's right, and what's right is PFF gas.
Amen. Wow.
Excellent.
Amen. I'm with you. I'm on board. Who do we need to write to? I'll write to my congressman even.
Somebody clip that.
Be like,
somebody clip that and send it to Chris and just get it done from the top.
Yeah, just black out my screen though. You know, just in case it goes poorly.
Right.
Anybody
who's
clipping
it. Just me.
Just take me out of the clip.
Or put the picture of Steve, like, just superimpose it over your screen. Sam and Steve. All right, what else do we want to cover in the draft? Do we have any questions from the chat? Otherwise, we're out of here. It's like an hour.
I don't have the chat pulled up, so I couldn't see it.
You don't have the chat pulled up. Are you even invested in this show? You're sitting there without the chat. Walt
not
is busy sounding off.
Not mentally, not emotionally. No.
Walt is busy sounding off, and you have no idea what he's talking about in the chat. I mean,
it's true. It's true. What is Walt yelling at us about?
He was bitching about Lawrence Taylor not dropping into coverage a while ago. I haven't checked since.
Yeah, he won't say that to his face.
No, probably not.
I wouldn't.
What else has happened in the last couple of days? We've had all the franchise tag news.
If I saw Lawrence Taylor in person, I'd tell him he's better in coverage than Derek Brooks.
He picked off Joe Montana. You can't argue with that.
Oh,
man's got a pick six against Joe Montana.
That's true.
Doesn't get better than that. Yeah, we'll hit the franchise tags and free agency and all that kind of stuff tomorrow with Brad Spielberger, the great Brad Spielberger. The chat
this is
asking
time to shine, man. This is time to shine.
It is. It's Brad's season right now.
It's Brad Spiel season.
The chat is asking how you guys feel about Braylon Allen. So that was from Sniper, I believe. How do you feel about Braylon Allen?
I didn't love him. I get it. He's really young. He's very productive. He's a giant. And I think he moves straight line speed pretty well for his size. The thing that bugged me the most about Braylon Allen is I actually think he's got decent footwork for a player of his size too. Like that was a plus of his game. I just didn't feel like he was a big time playmaker in space. And when you are a running back, the way that I give you value is how good are you athletically or mentally at getting to open space, right? Because that's what the job is all about. You are behind five giant men when you get handed the ball. Their job is to block for you. Your job is to read it. And ultimately, you are trying to do what? Find open space. You're trying to get beyond the offensive line, read it well enough to get to the linebacker level, get to the safeties, get to the corners, and then pick up a ton of yards after that. That's really where the value comes when you are a running back. I didn't feel like when Braylon Allen got that open space, he did enough with it. I didn't feel like he became that playmaker that I wanted him to become, even with the athleticism that I see from him behind the line of scrimmage. So I'm a little bit reserved there. Anytime there's kind of like RB vision questions, that's something that weighs pretty heavily into my scouting report. And then, you know, not really knowing what to do when you get into space is something that I don't love either. It felt like he was kind of running towards contact more than he needed to, which makes sense. He's a bigger guy, but still, I would like to see him do more with a lot of that open space. So I do like the footwork for his size. I obviously love his size. I love the, I love that he's a younger prospect. Love how productive he was. I just have questions on how he sees the field, and that's never going to grade well for me if I think that of a running back.
So I try and generally avoid, you know, crazy hyperbole when it comes to draft prospects. So I say that to preface what I'm about to say with Braylon Allen, that this is not hyperbole. When I first put on his tape, I genuinely checked that there wasn't a problem with the video player, that it was like running slow for some reason. That it, you know, wasn't like glitching out and running at 80% speed or just sort of slowing down for something. He is, let me read you my notes on Braylon Allen. Honestly, the tape felt like it was in slow motion compared with the other running backs I've watched so far. He looks like one of the least explosive athletes I've ever seen. Solid lateral cuts for a guy that size. Power is good when he's up to speed. He can run over people. Kind of like if you just put a defensive end at running back. Probably a bad sign for a guy that size that the best thing he does is east-west cuts and looks to bounce it outside. Like, he reminded me a little bit of, remember James Starks for the Packers, who was actually really quite a big running back, but like tried to be Reggie Bush, and everything he did was trying to bounce it outside and gain yardage. Like, if you're going to be Braylon Allen, embrace it and be Braylon Allen and run right into the teeth of the defense every single time. You can't be that size and try and be a small bounce at outside type of back. NFL defenses are too fast, good, and strong. You're not going to get that done. I don't like Braylon Allen as a prospect a lot. I just don't really see that working at the NFL level.
He also didn't run the 40 or any of the agility drills. So just not, it's just not ideal.
Right. Yeah. I mean... I find it difficult. I will say, though, you see that picture he posted of him at like 17, jacked out of his mind?
No.
He was like lifting, he was doing curls or something, right? Just had a bar.
I mean, he was like 17 when he got to Wisconsin.
Yeah. So it was him, presumably early in his time there in the weight room, right? Doing a, I don't forget what it was, like a curl, barbell curl or something, just like, looked like a photograph out of like Men's Health magazine, right? And then J.J. Watt quote tweeted it, friend of the show, by friend I mean hater.
Yeah, of course.
Quote tweeted it with like, what the hell, this was me when I was 17, and just posted some picture of him looking like a gangly 17-year-old with a football helmet on. It's like, we're different world of human, you know what I mean?
I actually like this J.J. Watt friend of the show bit. you should keep this going. I don't know if you could see it when we started the show, but Jordan was backstage when we were starting the show, and when I purposely looked up to watch his camera when the JJ Watt PFF sucks part came with the intro, Jordan just started laughing.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it was.
At first, he like picked his head up and he was like, "Who just said that? Like, did somebody like hijack the show?" And then he realized that that was actually part of the intro.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it was live on camera at the time, but I did. The guys in the booth over there told me we got a chuckle out of Jordan when that came on. No, this is what we do here. If there's media out there that's willing to sound off on PFF, we're probably going to put you in the intro. That's how the show works.
I'm going to do it next because I want to be in the intro.
No, you don't count. You know, we don't care. We've already distanced ourselves from your opinion.
I'd probably just get fired anyway, so it probably just wouldn't work for me. I'd achieve my dream, but at what cost?
Yeah, exactly. It's a Pyrrhic victory, you know? You would have won the battle but lost the war. That's what would happen there. Yeah. All right, we're out of here. This is craziness. We're going to hit free agency tomorrow with Brad Spielberger. Big thank you to Trevor Sikkema for showing up today and talking draft with us. And, of course, Jordan Reed. Go check out his mock draft. We will talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening.